everything's bigger and brighter, especially our passion for special education. As always, a warm welcome to our listeners.
We are your statewide special education liaison team, here to elevate the conversation one story at a time.
Our mission? Not just to share, but to connect, representing the special education community across our state. We are here to say,
Texas may be big, but its heart and stories are even bigger.
Join us on this journey together. Let's celebrate.
Hey, welcome to Sped Talk. We're here to record another episode. We're actually in Richardson today at To Be Like Me. I am Evan Heckman. We have Kara Skigel, who's a member of our Sped Talk team. And we're actually fortunate to interview a woman today. I'm going to let her introduce herself. Hollis, why don't you tell us who you are and what you're doing here?
Okay, thanks for having me. My name is Hollis Owens, and I am the founder and executive director of To Be Like Me. We are a nonprofit encouraging empathy, kindness, and compassion in students and teachers through disability awareness programs led by people living with disabilities.
Yeah, it's so cool. The reason that we're here today, as you know, our listeners know, we kind of go around the state and find different exciting and cool and positive things to record in relation to people with disabilities. The reason we're here is because my son is in fourth grade at Richardson ISD here in the local school district. And a couple months back in the fall, they went on a field trip and their class came here to Be Like Me. And I thought it was great. I work with special education on a regular basis. But when I got to talk to him about it, when I got to see some video of him helping to lead around a gentleman who was blind, visually impaired, I was just like, wow, what a powerful situation, and just knew we had to come and record an episode. So thankful to you to having us today. Kara and I have a few questions we want to ask you, and then we're going to take some time, maybe speak to some of the leaders that are here helping people. But do you mind just kind of starting with, how did this come to be? You're the founder. How did it originate? Where did this grow out of? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, my background is actually in medicine. So I graduated from UT Southwestern Physical Therapy School in 2000. So I've been a practicing physical therapist for about 20 years. And it was really through my work with my patients and their families that I heard about the barriers that exist for people with disabilities. And they aren't just physical barriers, they're human barriers. And so I found myself on the phone a lot with, you know, airlines, hotels, banks, schools, trying to educate the community. And just so that my patients could fulfill their goals, you know, be able to navigate an entire airline flight or be able to be independent at school, whatever it was, I was kind of that point person to contact the community and make sure that they had the education on their side so that we could help my patients reach their goals. And I realized there was a huge disconnect. People in the community really just weren't aware and didn't understand how to adapt or how to make something more universally designed for all people. And so I wanted to be on the other end of it. As much as I love my work as a physical therapist, I saw that there was a need and I knew that there was an opportunity to make a lot of change. Mm-hmm. And so To Be Like Me was born in December of 2018. So that was 4 months before COVID hit. And we were able to work with It was founded in December of 2018. And we spent about a year to figure out our programming and to kind of get an idea of what we wanted to do with this program. And so our programs started in December of 2019 in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And so that was 4 months before COVID hit. Yeah. And in that time, we worked with about 2,000 students and teachers through a field trip program. And then we shifted, just like everybody else during COVID, and we were able to interact virtually with students and classrooms all over the country, which was a blessing because as it was before, we only worked with schools in Dallas. And then now we had the opportunity to visit with a school in North Carolina where the students in an AP biology class were learning about chromosomes. And so we were able to add a human piece to what they were learning.
Right.
And it was really profound. Professors would reach out and say, all right, my student said that was the most impactful class we've ever had. Because we were able to say, this is why you're learning about blank.
Right.
And so we developed a lot of great partnerships during that time, partnerships with schools and organizations all over the country. So that was the blessing. But truly our bread and butter are the in-person interactions. We know that that's what makes the big difference. And so we were excited to be able to come back in person. But it's, you know, it's the ability to break the barrier that is so common out there, especially with students, fourth graders. That's really our target age. And these students are going to be the future healthcare workers, you know, business owners, lawmakers, right? So if we can really help them practice that empathy now, then we catch them before middle school, which is huge. And we are helping to equip them to be more empathetic, more kind, more compassionate community members.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. So that's the goal.
I love that. I love that you mentioned that your target audience was students, really. And so tell us a little bit about these virtual or in-person field trips. How many students and teachers have you reached, have been impacted by this work?
Well, each year we reach more and more students and teachers. And I will tell you that usually in April of a given school year, we schedule for the next school year. And teachers are very quick to sign up because they see changes in their classrooms. And so immediately, you know, just when we got back after COVID, we worked with about 5,000 students and teachers. Mm-hmm. Last school year, we worked with 5,900 students and teachers. And then this school year, we'll work with 6,500. So each year, we're adding more and more programs.
Even as we showed up here today to interview, you had schools coming. How many schools or classes can you facilitate in a day?
Our max number of students and teachers for one program is 120. And so I would say on average, we work with about 90 students and teachers at a time. That's a really more manageable number, but we can work with as many as 120 at a time.
So. And do those things happen 5 days a week? Is it, how do you kind of schedule that out as you have a need and apparently a request for more?
Yes. So we are very fortunate that we are mostly in donated space. So we have donated space on Wednesdays at the Tollison in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And then we do pay rent here on Fridays because Network does not use the space on Fridays. So we do help, we do pay for this space on Fridays here at Network. And so right now we're only doing field trips on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Okay.
And it is my goal to add programming. We just don't have the space right now to do it.
Okay.
So if anyone out there is sitting on 10,000 square feet and they would like to help us, grow into that space, we would love that opportunity.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got listeners out there. You never know what might turn up. Yeah. So appreciate that. You mentioned doing some virtual stuff. Do you still do any of that, even though you're doing in person? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. I mean, like I said, that was the blessing of COVID, that we were able to make connections with people in schools all over the country. And so many of them have continued to reach out to us and say, we want to keep doing this. And so I know in the next few weeks, we're visiting with students from Washington and Lee University and mm-hmm. Southern Virginia University who want to be future teachers. And so depending on what topic they want to learn about, we have a leader or two to talk to those students virtually. I think for the class next week, they want to learn about accessibility and how to accommodate for accessibility for their students. And so we have leaders who are experts in that, and they'll be talking to them.
So I love that you've talked about that, and we're going to have a chance to talk to some leaders in a little bit, but why don't you tell us about finding the leaders, about who they are, about what they bring, about how you determine who to be a part of this operation?
Well, as I mentioned, my background is in physical therapy. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, some of the leaders we have today were patients of mine.
Okay.
And one in particular, Brian Spann, was one of the reasons I started To Be Like Me. He was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy when he was 5, and I was his physical therapist at Scottish Rite. We stayed close, even though I left to have my 3 or 4 baby girls, and we kept in touch, and he would often send me texts or, you know, emails of a lack of accessibility in the community. So if an elevator was broken and he had to get down the stairs, he would send me a picture of how he had to be strapped into his chair so they could carry him down the stairs since the elevator was broken. Mm-hmm. And he would say something like, "Can you believe this?" Or, "Starbucks got rid of their straws," you know, and he'd send me something about that. And so little did I know at the time, he was really preparing me and kind of leading me toward this opportunity to educate the community. Some of our leaders are past patients who wanted to do advocacy work, like Brian. Brian did pass away a few years ago. I miss him dearly, but I still hear him encouraging me and just continuing to lead me on. Some of our leaders, just through word of mouth, they hear about us. Sometimes I've reached out, like, for example, Envision Dallas, which they were the Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind. Mm-hmm. I'd reached out to them about, "Hey, do you have someone who likes advocacy work who would be interested in helping us here?" And they, you know, sent Blake's name along, who you will probably meet in just a little bit. It's word of mouth, but also if I'm realizing that there are areas we need to focus mm-hmm. with the students, then I do outreach to get that leader.
I think that's really interesting, kind of that word of mouth thing. Kara and I were having a conversation earlier too about some of my past experience. And I was a school administrator before coming to Region 10 to work, and I'm looking on the website, I saw a few of my former students. And so some of the conversation was about an opportunity for students who have graduated to now find an opportunity to give back, to share, to continue along a path. And so I thought that was very, very interesting to notice them. And I wondered, you know, how do you find out? And mm-hmm. how do you choose your leaders? And sometimes it's word of mouth, and sometimes it's past relationships, it sounds like.
Our leaders have told me, you know, they've said, "Hollis, if I can do this full time, I would do it in a heartbeat." And so that is another motivator mm-hmm. for me to try to find our own space, because we are limited by, you know, just doing field trips 2 days a week.
Sure.
I think our leaders love what they do.
Yeah.
And so to be able to provide that opportunity for them would just be amazing.
You know, here in a little bit, we're going to get to interview some of your leaders. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ask their perspective, but your perspective as the founder of To Be Like Me, how do you feel like, or have the leaders grown in their ability to share and reach the community members? Have they grown and shown different skills that you were surprised by?
They have all grown in so many ways. And that is part of what we do. We help to guide them. I mean, they are the experts. Mm-hmm. So what they do is share their story. And, you know, everyone has a story. But that is where the empathy piece comes in. When you hear someone's story, that's when you get to practice empathy. Mm. And the fourth and fifth grade age, practicing empathy helps build those connections early. It's almost like planting the seed, mm-hmm. so they will continue to build on that. So when we have a leader who we're training, the training is really, hey, practice telling your story. Mm-hmm. Because really that's what they're doing for the kids, is they're mm-hmm. sharing their story. And sometimes, you know, they're not quite sure how to share their story. It's a matter of talking through it with them and thinking about it. And okay, this is the age level we're working with. So let's talk about at that age, what is easiest for them to understand. And so it's more helping guide them through telling their story, and they all do so well. But they do grow. I see a lot of growth from when they start and then when they're seasoned. The other thing, they grow not only in telling their story, but becoming a To Be Like Me family. The interactions they have with one another, the support they provide one another is beautiful. And so parents of our leaders tell us that they see big changes in their mental health after they've been leaders with us.
Right. So it seems like, you know, this is To Be Like Me is really just the platform. It's their stage to share their story, to become more confident in that, an opportunity they probably wouldn't have had otherwise, maybe to close family or friends, but now, you know, they're getting to pour into other people.
Let's take a minute now and talk to some of your leaders.
Hi, Kara.
And I'm Evan. And so we've been talking to Hollis, and she's been telling us a little bit about what goes on here. But we would love for you to introduce yourself to us and then let us ask you a couple of questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Evan. My name's Blake Lindsay, and I live in Plano. I get to work at Envision Dallas, and I love coming over here to Be Like Me on Fridays.
Awesome. So, Blake, tell our listeners, what is it like to be you? What are you living with that would allow you to come be here and share your experiences with people?
I am totally blind, and I love to tell people what that's like because it's so easy to feel sorry for people with a disability. And that's what To Be Like Me changes for people. We help people to not feel sorry for us, but to be able to relate with us. And so we give them lots of examples of what a day-to-day life is like. And before long, they're not feeling sorry for us anymore. And I've even asked people at the end, so do you feel sorry for me now? And they say, nope. And that's what we want. We want people to be able to identify with what it's like to be blind or deaf or whatever the disability is so that they can relate with us. And they're the people of the future. A lot of these people that we're talking to in elementary school and even junior high and high school, they are the employers of the future. And so they're going to be able to understand what we can do as opposed to just the things that we can't do.
Awesome.
Wow, Blake. So you spoke a little bit to this question I'm going to ask you, but if you could give us just a little more detail, what made you choose to be a leader here at To Be Like Me?
I heard from Hollis Owens here already been 5 years ago. And I got a call one day over at where I work, and she told me exactly what she was doing, and I could hardly wait to meet her. I thought, wow, because I'm used to going to talk to schools and things like that. But she mentioned that there was going to be people with various disabilities besides mine. And I thought, I have never gotten to do that with a group of people who have varying, you know, situations that we can really turn people's negative into positive on what they think about it. And I just thought, what an incredible idea to get a bunch of people together with a variety of what we call disabilities, even though I think it's not even a appropriate word sometimes, but it is what it is, and we can really shape people's minds as to what we can do, and they're pretty pleased about it. They don't feel sorry for us anymore, and that's what makes us feel so good.
That's great. You mentioned that you get some of the reactions of the visitors, and you can talk to them about how they feel after they've gone through it. Let me ask you, when you're leading other people through this, how does that feel for Blake?
Feels really good when they start asking questions, because I always purposely leave a few things out. I want them to have open minds and to feel free to ask people questions. Not everybody has a good attitude when they lose something, like if you lose your sight later in life. And so I let them know that some people may not be receptive to their questions, but most people will be, and we're glad that people want to know. And so I really get excited when they start asking questions at the end, because I know they're paying attention, and there's always going to be something that I purposely leave out. But I try to cover about 95% of what anybody would want to know, and I want to leave them some leeway to really be able to participate and to feel a part of the discussion.
Excellent. Kara, anything else you want to ask Blake?
No, I am just truly inspired by your story and your willingness to lead others in building that empathy. This is just such an incredible opportunity.
Well, we love converting sympathy into empathy. It's so easy to feel sorry for those with disabilities, and I used to be guilty myself of that. So if I met somebody with a disability that I was unfamiliar with, I could not relate, and I would tend to feel sorry for them. And so when I came here and met the people with To Be Like Me 5 years ago, at first I kind of felt sorry for a couple of people until I got to know them, and then I didn't feel sorry for them anymore at all, because I knew that they were living their lives to the fullest every day, and that we were going to be able to blaze a trail for the future with these students to be able to realize that, man, I don't have to feel sorry for that person. I just need to relate with them and figure out through what they're saying the best ways that I can possibly help them when they actually need help.
That's right. Thank you so much, Blake, for taking a few minutes. I know you're in the middle of leading a rotation, and we'll let you get back, but thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you for your podcast. I'm glad you're informing people and appreciate your great questions today.
You're welcome. Have a great day, Blake.
Thank you.
I'm Evan. Thank you so much for giving us a couple of minutes to talk to us.
Course.
We've been talking to Hollis a little bit, and we wanted to talk to some of the leaders here at To Be Like Me. So if you would introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about why are you a leader, then we'll ask you a couple of questions.
Sure. I'm Shawnette, and I have something called Larson's syndrome. It's rare. All of my joints in my body are dislocated. I do what I do here because I want to be able to pave kind of a path that people can see and go on with help and resources in a different path than I went when I was younger. I didn't know about living with a disability, and I had a disability, and so I want that to be different for people as they get older with disabilities, but also those without.
Okay.
That's why I like to be here, teach others.
Yeah, okay.
That's really wonderful. Shawnette, why did you choose to be a leader here at To Be Like Me?
Why? I just have a passion for helping people, and I kind of just wanted to share my story. So again, we don't have people going through the same mishaps or, you know, the same struggles alone when we can all kind of be together. And then even the community can come in. And this was a huge avenue where I could have a platform to speak and tell my story, but also share and prevent with others all together.
Yeah. When you're leading, what reactions do you see out of the visitors, the kids that are going through the field trip? What are they like? What are they learning when you're leading?
I think the biggest thing that I like is their nervousness when they come into the room and apprehension, and you can see it on their face, and then that light bulb moment where they're just kind of like, oh, this isn't so scary anymore. And my favorite part is when I talk to them about seeing differences and knowing that it's okay that we have differences, but then when they see, oh wow, it's so easy to have something in common with somebody that's so different from me, you know, that doesn't really make a huge deal. Like, I'm not as scared anymore. And so then their eyes are open and they're more eager to ask questions. They're more curious now. And again, not so scared. And I love that. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. When you're leading others and you're in front of the classes that come here or the community to participate, what does that feel like for you personally?
Can you repeat that one more time?
Sure. When you're leading the students that come here or the community members, what does that feel like personally? How does that help you?
Oh, it's really big for me. I struggle with a lot of anxiety and, just a lot of fears of people. And so when I do things like this, it just really shows me that, yeah, I can overcome this, but also my story is out there to help somebody. And so to me, that just really makes everything worth it. You know, all the fears, it's worth it.
So you've built some courage.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
That's awesome. This is just such a wonderful program. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
But more importantly, sharing it with the community and helping bring empathy.
Thank you so much for giving me a spot and a platform.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you for talking to us. We've been talking to Hollis a little bit about what goes on at To Be Like Me, and we wanted to talk to a leader. So would you introduce yourself and tell us about you being a leader here?
Like, yeah, should I use like my full name or just my first name?
Whatever's comfortable for you.
What it's like for me to be a leader.
Okay. Sure. Tell us your name and what it's like to be here.
My name is Noah, and I don't know, for being a leader, it's interesting. It's kind of like, it's basically like, it's like being a public speaker almost in a smaller scale, I'd say. Basically, it's like a bunch of kids will come in, like, usually, I'll explain to them, like, what it's like to be on the autism spectrum and stuff. Basically, it's like I'll go into like a lot of detail about like stuff, like certain symptoms that people on the spectrum might have, or kind of like what exactly the definition of autism is, and kind of like just like sort of smaller details, like, yeah, like, hey, it's kind of like where, like, how it's just like, you know, like ways that it's like usually tend to be treated and stuff like that, and like how like it's nothing like to, and it's nothing to like worry about, really.
Okay, very good.
So knowing you probably have goals for yourself, Noah, how did you get to be a leader here? What made you choose to be a leader?
Well, it's funny story. My mom actually learned about like this place, and she recommended it's a place to me, and like she got me in contact like with the people here, and like I got an interview, and one thing led to another, I was hired and stuff. Like, it was like the interview went that well and stuff. So like, hey, like, and after about two weeks later, I started my first shift and stuff. Well, it was like such the first job I ever had. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
When you're on the job, as you said, and you're leading others, how's that feel?
It feels all right. Although it can be a little tiring due to how much I have to speak. It's like, I give like basically a variation of this big speech that I've kind of planned on my head, like about like kind of explaining like the whole gist of things. Like, it's nice to kind of give people the speech, you know, kind of like give them like an idea of like, hey, I guess what things are like. But I was like, man, it can be really tiring after a while. Seems like I don't really have many breaks in between. So it's just kind of like, I mean, don't worry. Like now, like it's not like some like whole like it's not like some kind of like work like safety thing. It's just more like case. You know, like say like I work like four hours. I spend like what 3 hours here usually. And it's like, hey, usually just like a minute in between like different groups coming in. So it's kind of like, but yeah, I'm trying to get a little out of the breath. Well, it is nice to sort of just give explain like the gist of like this thing of this thing like to people and stuff.
So when you're sharing with the people who come here, the students, the teachers, the community members, what do you see in their reactions?
I mean, usually sometimes they seem to be like kind of like interested. Although sometimes unfortunately some of them just seem kind of indifferent. Like some of the kids being like some just seem like bored out of their minds. But most of the time they seem actually to be pretty like they're pretty engaging in the conversation. But I will say though, like this one story I had is like one kid was just like did not care about my speech at all. It's just like and just kept trying to ask me like, oh, like what do you think of this thing or this thing or this thing? And it's just I'm like wow, I didn't want it. Wow, I was trying to just keep my cool and say it in my head. I was like, shut up already. Like, I'm gonna be tough. But, like, I didn't say that, but I was, like, thinking it, like I'm trying to get my freaking speech here, talk at them.
Yeah.
No, I'd also like for you to tell them about
your being a student and what you're learning and what you hope to, Noah's extremely intelligent.
I am currently a third-year student at the University of Texas at Dallas.
Okay, what are you studying?
I am studying for a media arts major, like an arts and technology major.
Awesome. How's it going?
It's going good. Like, because I want to be a writer as a career and stuff. Like I want to like maybe like as like a film or TV writer, but or also some potentially other stuff like related to like visual arts and stuff. Like I don't know, maybe being an illustrator, for instance.
Okay.
And then it seems like an interesting job to me, or being maybe like an animator or like an effects artist and stuff.
Yeah.
Knowing that that's a goal you have to be in that field, how can to be like me help you get there?
It's kind of helped me, like, kind of wanting to be, like, a bit more confident with, like, sort of talking to other people. Like, and kind of, like, engage it. Kind of just meeting, like, new people and, like, sort of, like, and kind of gain more confidence and, like, sort of, like, myself is, like, it's, like, being able to, like, sort of, do, like sort of be, like, more assertive, like, in how I go about day-to-day things. Since I'm taking more, like, the lead in, like, conversations and stuff, for instance, with other people, when I talk with other people and stuff.
That's really wonderful. It's giving me the ability to gain that confidence.
Yeah, I feel like in a way it's helped me improve my social skills a lot since I've gotten to know like a lot of these or more people than I used to know before I was here.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. I'm glad I got to share it.
Yeah, I am too. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, nice to meet you all. And hey, I hope you have a nice day.
You too. Thank you, Noah. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
That was awesome. Kara, you want to come back to Hollis for just a minute?
So we've been viewing your website and looking at it. And honestly, as a liaison, I used it last week with our special ed directors and we used some of your videos, but we came across your news and events, upcoming events. And you have a spring community day coming in April. We were just kind of curious, what is that? Can you tell us about it?
Sure. So because we are booked up with field trips during the week, and during the school year, many times people ask, well, how can we see what you do if you're all booked up? And so the community days allow us to introduce our program to the community, and we sell out very quickly because, you know, people want to know and they're curious and they want to bring their families, because we know that also the conversations that we spark through our program, they continue at home. And that is huge that we're able to do that, break that barrier for families to talk. And so the community day is basically the program that we do for students and teachers, but we just do it for community members. So adults, kids, anybody who wants to see what we do.
They can just register and attend. That's awesome.
Online, they can go to our events page, and tickets are already on sale. So, I encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about what we do, or maybe they have that 10,000 square foot space and they're trying to decide if they want to give it to us, come to our community day program.
That's right. So. How do I fill the space that I have? Well, maybe I go to the community day for sure. You know, kind of in winding down our conversation with you, I've heard you talk about a couple different things. If you could sort of in one or two sentences share, what is your main goal? What is the main thing you were hoping to accomplish? I would love to hear that in sort of a just succinct, we want to do this.
That's really hard. Okay. Two things.
Okay.
Can I do two things?
You can do two main things.
Number one, what we do for students is profound. Teachers tell us when the kids go back to the classroom, they are better in groups, their behavior is improved, more acts of kindness, and just overall inclusive behavior. And I think that's one reason why we book up so quickly when the schedule comes out, because we are making lasting change when they leave. And we tell them before they leave. They are a part of the ripple effect of kindness. So we want them to take what they've learned, go out in the community, be kind, be compassionate, be patient with people. You never know what they're going through. So that's number one,
okay.
Changing the way these students see other people with differences and disabilities.
Okay.
Number two, what we do for our leaders. The growth that we see, the positive changes in their mental health, their advocacy skills, it is truly amazing that we're able to not only serve students and teachers in the community, but also these leaders who are the heart and soul of what we do.
Awesome, 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 awesome.
The capacity you're building through this opportunity is just so inspirational, truly. Just at the short time that I knew about To Be Like Me, have shared it with directors, new directors in our region, and one of the things they struggle with is that building empathy piece. And honestly, some of the videos that we used from some of your leaders changed their mindset, and now is going to allow them to change their teachers' mindset. So even from afar, those videos, although they may not ever get to attend here, have inspired them. So thank you.
So I appreciate that you said that about the videos. But I think coming to our program and experiencing it is a whole different thing. For example, you asked what happens in a program. So I would like to address that.
Absolutely.
So students arrive and we do an introductory video. And it really helps lay the foundation for the vocabulary they're going to be learning. So we talk about empathy in that intro video. Stereotypes, what are they? This is a safe space to ask questions, and so please do that. We tell them about the different disabilities they're going to learn about during that field trip. And we do ask that they think about their questions before they ask, just to make sure they're respectful.
Mm-hmm.
But our leaders are prepared to answer them. This is a safe space. And so it really just kind of helps them understand, okay, this is what I'm going to be learning about, and it's okay if I ask questions. And then from there, they're divided into five different groups. And we have shepherds, and they each shepherd takes students to the start of their first rotation. Every 18 minutes, they rotate to the next. And so by the time they finish with five rotations, it is almost 2 hours. And so then we go back into the intro room and we do a wrap up. And we send them home with a bookmark. And on one side, there's Braille, the alphabet in Braille. And then the other side, there's the alphabet in American Sign Language. So they can learn both Braille and sign language when they leave. But the experiences we have include assistive technology, FlyKind Airlines, a cafe, a classroom experience, and then a day in the life of someone in a wheelchair. So just to highlight a few of those, the cafe experience is where students walk into a room that has round tables. It looks like a cafe. And they sit with different leaders who live with various disabilities, and they talk about their favorite things. It could be, you know, their favorite foods, TV shows, hobbies, and that is a great way to find common ground, which is a life skill, because you're always going to meet people who are not like you. Maybe you have to work with someone who is not like you. How do you find common ground with them? It's a life skill. So they get to do that in the cafe experience. In the FlyKind airline experience, the kids walk into a room that looks like the inside of an airplane.
We saw that.
And they're immediately taken into an overstimulating situation for about 5 minutes. During that time, the flight attendant is giving gate information. You know, gates are actually changing flight number you're on, how long the flight is going to be, where are we flying, and there's so much going on that after everything dies down, the flight attendant says, does anybody know where we're flying? And the kids are like, wait, you said that? Does anybody know what flight number we're on? I have no clue. And so we do talk to the kids about our brains. I'm a neuroscience major, so I love the brain. And we talk about how sometimes we just can't, our brains can't organize all the information coming in at one time. And so in that airplane experience, many times what happens is their brain says, nope, no more. There's already a baby crying, a bell ringing. There's a fan blowing on me. I'm trying to do a handheld maze. So the last thing I was worried about was what you were telling me. And you can translate it to being overwhelmed out in the community. For instance, at school, in a classroom. When your classroom gets noisy, which it does a lot, do you think you're going to absorb what your teacher is trying to teach you based on what you learned today? And they're like, no. And so it's a way to illustrate that we all learn differently. We all process information differently. And so we need to be mindful of each other in the classroom. And I think these little tidbits help when they go back to the classroom and we hear stories about, hey, the climate of my classroom has changed. There's awareness. And so, anyway, that's just two rotations. I won't.
That's great. No, it's fantastic. That's a glimpse.
I want to come now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the hook to try to get people to want to come. So we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you here a little bit about the beginnings, the goal, what goes on here. And we're very excited to have an opportunity to talk to some leaders. So thanks so much, Hollis.
Thank you for having me. And if I, can I say one more thing?
You can say whatever you like.
Okay. Another really important piece of this is there was a phrase coined in the disability rights movement, and it was nothing about us without us. That was the phrase. And hear it to be like me. If you want to learn about a certain disability, the person you're going to learn about it from is living with the disability. And that is so important because, as I mentioned, they are the experts. And so I would like to encourage, if businesses and corporations are having conversations about accessibility and universal design, inclusion, the people who should be part of that discussion should be living with those disabilities. And so I would just invite you to remember that because they know.
Kind of the idea of design with them, not for them.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect. That is a key piece.
That's great. Absolutely. One thing we would say as we kind of wrap this up, we always let people know, once a sped talker, always a sped talker. So as this episode goes out and gets listened to, you are a part of that, just like we were a part of recording it right now. So again, we're so thankful that you could do this with us today, and we look forward to future success for you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're so welcome.
And that's a wrap on another enlightening episode of Sped Talk, where every conversation, every story we share is a step closer to a more inclusive and understanding world.
Stay connected with Sped Talk on Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, and Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast episode. Thank you for being part of the Sped Talk family. Stay tuned.